first of tonight's speakers, Caroline, is going to speak 15 minutes.
Hi, I'm Caroline, I'm an addict.
Hi,
I feel really, really nervous. I've never done a share at a meeting this big before. I hear it's being recorded as well. That sort of freaks me out. I don't know why, because I actually, my job before I had to give up working was working as a broadcaster, so I have actually broadcast to millions of people, but not about myself and not unscripted. And sort of, you know, I'm really, really nervous. I'm 5.5 years clean. I've been in NA for 5.5 years. And I came into NA with my life a complete train wreck from my drug use. Not only my drug use, but my eating disorder, shopping addiction, multiple other addictions. Although the period of my addictively using Class A drugs, because I was addicted to prescription drugs before that, was quite short, probably only about 6 months of really heavy using, my using got very bad very quickly. Basically, I was in Jamaica. I was there because my mother was very, very ill, and I was sort of trying to look after her. And I couldn't really cope with her. It was very distressing. The nature of her illness was very distressing. And I couldn't really cope with it. And in Jamaica, you couldn't... I'd been using before that, but, you know, I'd phone my dealer. I'd sort of, you know, when I felt like using cocaine. But in Jamaica, it just didn't work like that. I went to score some drugs in Jamaica, thinking I'd get a gram or two of cocaine. They said, do you want 1 kilo or two? And I sort of was like, right, okay, this is slightly different. So I ended up leaving. I went to this ghetto at midnight. Someone I'd met on the plane who'd just come out of prison in the UK. And I was sort of just going around trying to get cocaine, thinking it was very likely that someone would, you know, kill me after, you know, raping me and then steal my car. And I just remember thinking, well, it doesn't really matter because I've got to get the drugs. And then if I am gang raped and murdered, then my family will know how unhappy I am. And it was sort of, you know, in that sort of madness, you know, I could have just told them that I was unhappy, you know, rather than sort of, you know, exposing myself to, you know, really kind of extreme danger of kind of scoring drugs from these kind of people in those kind of situations. And so I left with a large bag of cocaine, and then I had it by my bed every day. And from then on, every single day, the first thing I did was get up in the morning and do cocaine. And I wouldn't go to sleep at night. I would just keep going. And I would come back to the house at some time the following afternoon, have a couple of hours of Valium-induced sleep, and then start using again. And I managed to make a huge hole in my nose that was so big that every time I breathed, I made this very loud whistling noise. So you could actually hear me coming about 20 feet away because of this whistling. And when I went into treatment, everyone was just laughing because I thought I kept saying, like, you know, that my using wasn't as bad as other people's, and they were like, but you're the only one who's like whistling with this huge hole in your nose, you know. So it was, and I remember I would do things like, I liked drink driving. In fact, I liked drink driving so much that I would travel around with 4 bottles of vodka in my car in case I became too sober to drive. And I remember thinking I was having a heart attack because I'd taken too much cocaine. And my response to that was to pull over, do some more cocaine to calm down and carry on driving. So, you know, the sort of insanity of the using was there. And I after I'd had one long session of using, I drank a bottle of pink liquid that I thought was a soft drink, but it was actually a liquid used to clean the inside of a car engine. And so I drank the whole bottle. I then, the sort of projectile vomiting about 20 feet away from me, I ripped out the inside of the lining of my throat so I couldn't speak. But I thought, instead of going to hospital, I'd go to a party that night, not being able to speak, but doing sign language to everyone I met, explaining that I couldn't speak because I'd drunk something you used to clean a car engine with. And when people said to me, well, why didn't you go to hospital? It just didn't occur to me to go to hospital. I just went for 3 days. I kept going out to all these parties, sign languaging, because I couldn't speak. And it still didn't strike me that my using was a problem, or that that I needed to stop then. And I finally realised that I wasn't in control of my cocaine use. I kept crashing my car every time I left the house. And I would sort of crash into juggernauts in broad daylight because I would misjudge the distance between myself and them. I was always sort of, you know, writing my car off. And when I'd go to the local shopping mall, the security guards would just run the minute I got in there and sort of surround my car to try and prevent me crashing into these into everyone else's car. And I had... I'd left my drugs at my mother's house because I was my boyfriend at the time had some business function I was trying to behave properly at. And I became nervous in the middle of the function. And I thought cocaine was the thing to calm me down. So I drove a very long distance to get the cocaine, crashed the car on the way back, came in saying, laughing, saying I've crashed the car again. And then I realised that night that I had a problem and that I needed to do something about it. And so I started investigating going into treatment. But the first time I went to a sort of treatment place in Jamaica, I turned up straight from a nightclub and with the bottle of vodka. And they said, well, you stink of vodka. And all this kind of clubbing till 10 o'clock the next morning has got to stop. And I thought, well, no, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. And what finally happened was my drug dealer burgled my apartment because I owed him money. I said to my family, the thing you have to understand is that he's my best friend and he's completely trustworthy after he'd burgled my apartment. They thought I'd lost the plot and so they packed up my bags and they sent me back to London. And I had a sort of final binge on cocaine before I left, knowing I was going to have to go into treatment. And I'd already been snorting cocaine off my passport and laptop and everything for quite some time. But I sort of covered all my clothes and suitcases in cocaine with this binge. And I arrived at the airport completely off my head, not able to sort of lift any of my suitcases or do anything. My cousin, who was accompanying me, was trying to rub all the cocaine off my clothes so it wasn't quite so obvious. I got to Heathrow Airport, covered in cocaine, sniffing really loudly, and they arrested me. And they sort of took away, they kept taking away all my possessions and testing them, and then they said, you know, they said, you've been in contact with the Class A drug. I said, oh, well, people around me, you know, have been using. They said, that's rubbish, you know. You've obviously been using because everything you have is covered in cocaine. And basically I was, you know, taken off into a side room. It was all looking very dodgy. They thought I was a drug mule. And eventually I got out and I sort of realised, you know, it's not that I hadn't done things that were illegal before. I didn't like the waiting time with drug dealers. So basically, I sort of moved my dealer in England into my house. And although he would try and leave the house, he said it was better for him to leave the house to do his, you know, to sort of, you know, actually, do other clients. I refused to let him leave the house. I said everyone had to come in and buy the drugs in my house because I didn't want to let him out of my sight. And I spent a lot of time with him. He was a violent crack addict, who I knew was violent to all his girlfriends, who wanted to have sex with me, who was giving me free drugs because he wanted to have sex with me. And that's the person I chose to spend most of my time with. Everyone was like, you're mad spending time with this guy. He's violent, he's unstable, he's on crack. You know, he was constantly hearing people in the walls, you know, people climbing, you know, up, running up the stairs. You know, he was totally unstable. And I thought that he was my absolutely best friend in all the world. And he was the most trustworthy person I knew. And it was... you know, I was basically, you know, I was just totally insane, and I was bulimic, and I was sort of making myself sick three times a day. But I thought I was eating healthily because I would only do it after 7 o'clock at night, and I'd eat healthily until then. And I was going to the gym all the time, on so much cocaine. I thought I was going to have a heart attack every time I went to the gym. So I thought I was sort of functioning as an addict. Well, I didn't realise I was an addict, but I thought I was functioning. And it was only because my external appearances were functioning. You know, I got my hair done every week, I got my nails done every week. It was only the last 3 days before I went into treatment that everything kind of fell apart and I couldn't be bothered to brush my hair. And then I sort of realised something was wrong. And so I went into treatment with an eating disorder, cocaine and alcohol addiction. I also had this sort of condition where I thought I was deformed. I'd always thought, my father was always telling me I was ugly when I was little, so I thought I was really ugly. And I'd become really paranoid about being so ugly when I was a teenager, and I couldn't go out in sunlight because I thought that, you know, then everyone else would see how ugly I was. And so I had to just lock myself in my room in darkness all the time. And so I came in with quite a lot of sort of various conditions, and I'd had clinical depression before I started using. I'd actually sort of been suicidal from the age of 12 since my parents got divorced. And it was only when I sort of became less depressed that I really started using drugs, because when I was sort of clinically depressed, I just spent my entire time fantasizing about suicide and thinking I needed to kill myself and that was the only way out. It was when I cheered up that I thought drugs might be a solution. And that sort of suicidal thing has kind of followed me into recovery, and I do get these kind of, it's much improved now, but in early recovery I did still get that suicidal thinking, and sometimes, you know, it would go quite far with the suicidal thinking, and I would think, I would actually start, you know, I have actually got to sort of a stage of planning, and then it was last year I just prayed for that to be removed, for the suicidal thinking to be removed, and the extreme panic attacks to be removed, it was removed, basically, I've really hardly had that at all now, and that's just a huge, huge step forwards, because I've had this suicidal thinking since I was 12, and I don't have it anymore, and it's been removed, and basically, I came into recovery. I was in treatment for a long time, because I had various kind of other mental health kind of things and so many addictions. I was in treatment. I only left treatment last September, actually, so I was in treatment part-time, but I was in treatment for about 4.5 years. And, you know, just part-time for the last 18 months. But, you know, I kind of needed to be. And a lot of very difficult things have happened to me in recovery. You know, my mother died when I was about 1.5 years clean. And the difficult, you know, obviously that was upsetting because we'd had a very bad relationship. My mother was, my mother's whole family are kind of schizophrenic and unhinged. And my mother was very unhinged. And we had a very bad relationship from the beginning. And then she died and we couldn't sort it out. And, you know, and also I found out after she died that my aunt, who I'd always sort of seen as a surrogate mother and trusted and thought was wonderful, had actually been stealing a lot of money from my mother while my mother was ill, and still owes me a huge amount of money, which she doesn't want to pay back. And it was a huge betrayal of trust to find out that she'd been stealing money from my mother for so many years. And my boyfriend, who I was very devoted to and we had a very codependent relationship with, started becoming abusive and violent, and we split up. I did a building project which was absolutely mad. It was so stressful. I started with the suicidal thinking again, relapsed on self-harm, and didn't relapse on alcohol and drugs. I've never relapsed on alcohol and drugs since I came into treatment and went to NA. I've relapsed on bulimia, I've relapsed on self-harm, I've had shopping problems, but I've never relapsed on alcohol and drugs. I mean, I would do anything rather than relapse on alcohol and drugs. And, you know, no matter how difficult it gets, I do have thoughts of using. Even last week, I was at my neighbour is this mad Eastern European property developer who just builds illegal buildings next to my house every 2 seconds. And he just started another one last week. And I just thought, I want to use Valium and codeine, but then just thought, no, can't do that. I'm working the steps. I've got a sponsor. I am trying to finish the steps. My sponsor is not finished the steps yet, so I'm waiting for her to finish. I mean, I've recovered from a lot of different things, you know, the drugs, with bulimia, with the shopping, with all the other things. And although I'm going through a difficult situation, my housing at the moment is very unstable, and I've got this mad neighbour. I'm not acting out. I'm not acting out with drugs. I'm not acting out with alcohol. I'm not acting out with shopping. I'm not acting out with food. I'm not acting out with, like, romance or men or anything. And I think that's the thing. I mean, I think it's just, you know, I think it's like being in recovery doesn't make your life easy. Life can be very difficult in recovery. But I've had the support to deal with the difficulties that I've got. And now I'm at the stage where I don't think I have to act out in any area when a difficulty comes. I can work through it without acting out. And I think that's, you know, that's where I've got to after 5.5 years of recovery. And I think I'll leave it there.
Thanks.